I guess we weren't being... Hello?
Hi, Glenn. I think we got you back. The conference bridge just went away and asked us to acknowledge it was being recorded.
The problem, I've completely forgotten that to turn on that we must record our session.
Oh, sorry.
Can you see okay. that there?
I have it already.
All right. It's done now, Glenn, but we didn't get up until just now. That's why the interruption.
Okay, there was no recording up to now?
From lunch to now.
So let me just make a statement that for the last couple hours we've been discussing the Common Print Dialogue, and there are a set of slides now posted that kind of get to the major concepts. Please go look at those, and you can catch up with what we're doing. All right, now back to this. So we want to, you know, avoid make it adaptable for the interface based on the size of the platform, including not just the display, but also its resource capabilities as far as memory and processing speed. You know, we can't always, even though I might have a large display, I cannot do a preview if I don't have enough resources to do it with.
If you don't have enough computing resources or memory resources or whatever.
Right, you want color adjustment? I don't think so. I even have now a new iconic I came up with to rep. You know, on some of the print dialogues on your desktop, you can open a little panel usually to one side, and it'll show you a turned corner. It'll show you the N-ups. It'll show you how it's going to do the print ordering. It's a little iconic representation. I had that down to the same size iconic as the ones I showed earlier. So I've made a new format for that, for if you want to even do that kind of stuff. And then again, back to the how do we handle the extensibility? Next. Are we still up? Because I have to get connected again.
We got kicked off, but we're back in.
Yeah, I'm not displaying it. So, oh, there it is. Okay, it came back. Okay, there's Andrew. Okay. So here it says, what is the current state? And as you said, Ira, we've been doing this for 5 years. There are prototype levels of the new dialogues and some of the back end. But honestly, Till, how close are we to being done?
How close are we to being done with the dialogue?
Even the back end.
Even the back end. The back end, the patching of applications and libraries is completely missing.
Yeah, so there was
some testing done on GTK, but not more.
But we're not, after 5 years, we're not even close.
Yes.
We can't throw a stone to the
pond. Because it seems when we are going away from Peter's design and trying something new, which is now following better the human interface guidelines of KDE and GNOME, then we have to start over, and the only thing which we have is the debug interface.
Yeah, so none of these things are these are just my thoughts about what we could do. But I don't think we can spend another 5 years. Now, how we get resources, I don't know. So, is there still a need for the next one is a set of questions. Is there still does there still a need for the Common Print Dialogue to be common? Okay? To have a default UI, to manage extensions, etc. If all of that stuff that has to be done is going to take more than five, can it be done in 5 years or less? Well, no, then go back to the beginning of the presentation and forget the rest, because there's no reason going on. And if yes, we can get it done, then we should go on. So, is there still a need for the Common Print Dialogue? Honestly.
Yes, the original idea was that when you are on one machine, on one desktop machine, for example, that for all distributions you get the same printing dialog. For all applications you get the same the same printing dialog. And also that the printing dialog is feature complete, so that everything which you can do with the printer with cups, you can really do.
Is there still a need? Have the desktops, have the applications made their own dialogues, have sufficient printer support that we no longer need the CPD?
I would be inclined to say no, because it seems to me that all of the major systems out there that have their own print dialogues, like QT and so on, kinds of open bugs in them about this doesn't work and I can't do this, and I mean there's huge problems with all of that stuff.
But the problem still exists. It didn't go away.
In fact, for example, in KDE, it actually got worse going from KDE 3 to KDE 4.
I'm sorry, we didn't hear that. It got worse.
It got worse going from KDE 3 to KDE 4.
Oh, we've regressed. Oh,
we've regressed, yes.
Because KDE is not what did not supply a dialogue anymore, and so there was a fallback to the QT supply dialogue, which was inferior to the
KDE 3 actually had a fairly sophisticated print system, and they eliminated it and defaulted to the QT one, and it was a regression.
Okay.
The idea is, though, if these platforms are being phased out, is it worth the effort to continue?
Yeah, I think the Hal's trying to say is there's still a hole, right? Or is it Tim? I can't remember who's on.
Important is that the common printing dialog needs a permanent support, and when rewrites of a desktop like KDE from 3 to 4 are done, where nothing is as it was before, and all the applications and dialogues and everything has to be completely rewritten from scratch, then, and when then the manpower is missing to take over the printing dialog, then we would lose the printing dialog, the common printing dialog again.
But not if I think, I believe that we can make the behavior well-defined, and create a set of, you know, APIs and pre-made C files or whatever we need, that how it actually gets displayed would actually get done. But now I don't have to worry about anything behind it. I guess that was my goal, is to do everything behind the skin.
Oh, right, to have open printing focus on doing the stuff behind the skin, and finally acknowledge that skins are inherently necessary, and that making it look the same on every operating system and every distribution and every desktop manager never was a viable objective and was the kind of monolithic behavior that only a cross-platform application with a lot of developers like OpenOffice could do.
Or, you know, Apple or Microsoft.
or Apple or Microsoft, right, yeah. Where they get more control of the UI.
But look at JTAP. Yeah, I actually use it in some of my projects, and it works very, very well, and I use it a lot. Okay? I don't care what it looks like at the front end. I love its APIs. I love its definitions. So can I create the same thing here?
So, Glenn, assume we did. Still, is there any usefulness to having a better than awful or missing dialogue in the common desktop managers?
No. So now. But I wouldn't call it the common print dialogue.
Oh, I agree. You know, I would call it the, you know, coherent print dialogue or something. I would change the name, right?
So, as we go through, I don't know if it's this presentation or another one, basically I see an order to who wants to be responsible for the print dialogue. All things are done by applications, right? So it's usually the application who wants control of the dialog because it has to match what the application is doing. Applications often don't write their own, so they default to the systems. Now, in this case, just like KDE, the system didn't write one. So what Open Printing does is write a default one. We won't call it the generic one. So if the app doesn't want to write it and the system doesn't want to write one, here's a default one.
Which slide do you want, Glenn?
Oh, I don't know if this is on one of these slides. I keep jumping. I've had several sets of slides. Right now I'm on number 4, but let's see if I can find where I did this.
We've got both of the other new sets of slides here on Andrew's machine, so we can throw up whatever you want.
And I can't remember now. But basically the concept is the
I think it's almost slide 5, it looks like, maybe.
So that was the guideline principles. So,
okay.
So basically, the Open Printing group, would create a dialogue, a print dialogue. It would be very generic. Let's not use the word common, just generic. So that if everything else fell apart, the application didn't want to write it, the platform, desktop, whatever you want to call it, didn't want to write one, here's one to use. We know it works. It may not match your skin, but here's one that works. And number one, it becomes an example for somebody to write their own. But
well, let's back up a tiny little bit here, and I'd like to kind of talk about what happens inside of QT, just as sort of an example to kind of get so we can think about some things.
Sure, sure.
QT is cross-platform, so it has a built-in dialogue, but that dialogue is actually only used on non-Windows, non-OS X environments. So in OS X and on Windows, it actually calls the native print dialogue that's supplied by the system.
So it's doing.
So I sort of visualize the CPD or whatever you're going to call it as being the new system dialogue for Linux and other Unix-like environments. And I would expect that what QT would do then is it would say, oh, well, we don't need our own dialogue anymore since all of these environments now have a native one. We just need to wire ourselves up to the native one, which would be CPD in our case. I mean, that's kind of the way I visualize it working.
But the CPD behavior is the same on all of those systems, but someone had to make the skin for that system. And that still works with your QT model.
Yeah, because it doesn't care.
It's calling the behavior. The behavior is calling the skin. Or skin and behavior are connected, I guess, in this case.
So the work on the DBus API and on kind of the plumbing of the common printing dialogue, Hal, do you think that's probably mostly recoverable, that is, we could continue to use it, potentially abandoning the specific look and feel on which we've wasted far too much time?
You know, I didn't really dig into that part of the code too much. It probably is, but...
So that's a perfect answer. You don't care about that part.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to finish that part. Make sure it's concrete, glued, stapled, and in a pretty bow package, because you don't ever want to think about it.
Right, it just wants to work have some maintenance.
And that's what the German government wants. They don't want common print dialogue prettiness. They want the guts to work, and they don't want to worry about it. So I think your statement is, his answer was perfect. Yes, we need to finish that, Ira. That needs to be in glue, you know, done. Testable.
That needs to be a rock-solid reference implementation, which is actually also shippable.
Yeah, it is the implementation.
Got some.
And that's what the German government, I think, wants.
I think it is, too, because I think they fully realize that open office will never come play, and neither will the browsers. And neither will a lot of other major applications.
But OpenOffice,
They have politics that say they're not going to.
But they'll definitely call our behavior.
Right. But they would definitely call our behaviors, and if we had well-known packaged behaviors that had a main API call that said, just do all these things, you know, the sort of next layer from just print, sure they would call them, because they have nothing to lose by calling them. And even in the, for instance, open office environment, they might offer, you know, some hierarchical, you know, you can get the simple print, you know, the common print the simple print interface here, or you can use the, you know, device, the platform tailored interface here, which presumptively is richer, however, it's also presumptively harder to use. Most people.
If you don't have one, you can't find one for the system, here's one to use.
Right. Yeah, here's one to use all the way to, you know, a set of, a skin that, you know, has those icons for the well-known behaviors.
Okay. Whatever it takes. But here's one that works. You didn't want to write it, and I understand why, but here's one that works. So that's why you're a great straight guy into slide 5. So that's why we kind of need to look at the guidelines. I think that's a good project for open printing, to find the objects, the elements, the attributes, the ranges, how they group, how they interact, and the constraints. Well, it sounds like PWG, but okay.
it does sound like PWG, Glenn.
But we need the guidelines. If we don't have them, if Ira McDonald can't come up with an RFC number or something else, another numbered document, then we need that information.
Right.
All right.
There you go. We could publish it as an RFC, but we got to get someone young to submit it.
Okay.
The average delay in queue has gotten pretty long now.
But managing extensions, this is the issue where I've always kind of seen it. It makes me nervous that different vendors, people who think they know about printing but don't print, don't write drivers, use different words to mean different things. Coloring threw me for a loop, okay? So I think we should have a registry of terms, acronyms, and the values that must be used by the dialogues. It's not affecting the skin and what it looks like, but you will call number of copies, okay?
Right.
You will call it NUP. Maybe the user doesn't know what NUP is yet, but he will. Because he's going to see the word NUP, or that iconic representation for NUP, everywhere. And you're not allowed to come up with you can't use the word resolution, please. Not when you're not, that's not what you're doing. Now, we can't do much to enforce it except, write a mail note to the people who says, okay, you've used the word resolution where you mean DPI or pixels per inch or something else. Please change it. Non-conformant. I don't know what else you do beyond that. But why would anybody who doesn't really want to write a printing interface and do anything else come up with their own name if they knew one existed? Especially if it had the values already filled in for it.
Hey, Glenn, I don't agree with your assessment. Let's say for the resolution or DPI, they are legacies. They have already existed for like 10, 20, 30 years.
But what?
Nobody's going to change that right now to follow a standard. Okay, rename all our drivers to use the word resolution or use the word DPI.
No, you're not, the people who are writing the dialogues.
But the okay. what it is
behind the curtain, I don't care. Now, you can't go back and ask everybody to retrofit everything. This is just going forward.
That's what Glenn was recognizing here. For instance, in vendor private MIPS, there are an absurd number of also synonyms that are not resolution or DPI.
One of the biggest problems in the dialogue part.
But going forward, we don't want KDE. They come up with a new dialogue to replace the QT one. They cannot use the word resolution. they must use the word DPI.
So what dialog? Qt dialog? But they get the translation string from PPT file.
They used to.
They should.
Okay, I'll do that for you, Tucker.
When Tux finishes abandoning PPDs, they're going to disappear.
But irregardless if they use PPDs or not. Now, software has a very good job of translating the word resolution to DPI. I think it can do that.
Yeah, and to the 140 languages that it's localized into as well.
Now, it's transformed.
So, Glenn, I think that's the distinction. What's presented to the end user may not be the inscrutable English word N-up.
But I don't care what
up is what we mean.
I think the problem is...
I think you can't change... I don't care that it's N up. The word is going to be something, and it's not going to change. I don't care what the vendor calls it. He has to map it, or we have to have a mapping from his word to that word.
But for me, the problem is, I mean, every vendor has their own terminology, and at the end of the day, it's confusing to the end customer. If you have a common dialogue which has something different, people just don't understand the terminology.
You mean something different from that particular vendor's terminology?
Exactly, yeah.
No. Yeah, but that is equally a problem if you have more than one dialogue, because the vendor has to relearn it in the same application.
Yeah, I think the problem is not a problem I'm using recompilers, but not a problem anymore.
We support many different vendors, and we have this issue constantly. I mean, even things like page size names, H11, letter, whatever it might be, and causing issues all over the place.
Right. Well, I would go along with the paper the media type. How many media types are there?
The biggest problem is different applications using different print dialogs. And different print dialogs have different look and feel, different names. That's the question of the problem. If I ever use the same printing dialog, I think that's not a big deal anymore.
Except I don't think we can get everybody to use the same printing dialog.
Yeah, we cannot. That's the problem. I mean, even how many different translations we have for the string letter in our company just because of the
vendors
here.
Yeah, about a half a megabyte worth of translation into whole phrases.
And a whole group of people who know how to...
Even a concept that does translate to a single word in lots of languages.
I don't know. It's an idea.
It's this string. I'm just talking about the internet.
No, I know. Before you've gone to other languages.
But if we don't start the management of that stuff sometime, it's never going to occur. It's going to get worse.
We have the same problem on Windows and Macintosh.
We have the same problem everywhere.
Yeah, that's the same problem right now.
So now that it's resolved.
No, it's not easy to resolve.
Right. Can we focus on something that...
But you have to start somewhere.
Yeah. The problem is, even on the Mac right now, where the Mac reads page size translations from the PPD, except for known pages, it uses its own strengths. We have all our problems with that.
Right.
Well,
and various vendors, print drivers use, as you say, various synonyms for a letter, even in the same language.
Right.
Although standards for that have been in place now for 10 years.
It might be true, but the end customer might just not understand what it means. That's
right.
The problem if they're two different strengths.
Well, yeah, because they have already learned the hard way to mentally translate from one to the other.
Well, so whether we do this or not, I think it's an idea we shouldn't abandon.
Same thing.
Oh, yeah. If it's a different division of the same vendor, or if it's a different model family, they almost undoubtedly use different words to mean the same property across different printers.
That's because different...
You're not going to fix that.
No, but my comment just being that if you come up with a common printing dialogue, be careful with how you name things, because even the end user might just not understand what it means.
Well, I mean...
But it'll be no worse than it is now, right?
That's why I you know, Glenn's saying use the standard word, and I'm saying,
what's the standard?
There actually is. Has been a standard for PWG standard media types and media sizes for 10 years, and IPP requires it, and IPP everywhere requires it. And if you stick a proprietary name in there, it says it may not work. If you put a vendor private name or a paper size in, you can expect it to break.
So
I think that this has to become one of the features of being the Common Print Dialogue. If you're going to be able to change the interface name, the interface look, which may ultimately be change the behavior, then it's no longer a Common Print Dialogue.
Well, Glenn, you started by saying, do we still need a Common Print Dialogue? And I think we all wish we had one now, and it was already shipping, but the question is, can we wait another 5 years to get it? And if we do, are we solving a problem for a class of computers that's become obsolete and you can only find them in the Smithsonian Museum?
Okay, but I think if the print dialogues end up in the cloud, we're going to have an infinite number of dialogues.
Uh-huh. Yeah. As I was saying, if n is the number of providers, we'll have about 2n plus 3.
And this is not meant to be sound like it's going to come out, but sometimes somebody in Korea makes up the dialogue for the people in English, and I don't understand that word. So we might
have that problem myself.
Yeah, so
they don't necessarily all start with English terms.
Given as the schedule continues on back to back to back to back, I say it's time for a break.
Yes. I think we're going to take a break. That was the best idea so far this afternoon. Glenn, thank you for all this. We're going to take about a 15-minute break. We will leave the call off, right, because we'll break the recording otherwise. And we'll reconvene in whatever 15 minutes is. At the hour. We'll reconvene at the hour.
Exactly 4 p.m.
Thanks for making all these good slides and guiding this discussion, Glenn. And I'm going to go get some coffee.
Yes, in this point. So we could put the printer somewhere in your room also.
After giving all the good stuff at Apple all week.
I know. I told Mike, I said, you realize you were absolutely spoiling us.
Yes.
We aren't going to appreciate a mere ordinary.
And
We can call it ugly.
Because it's ugly what happens when Guido's brother comes to see you with your
not help as much, but more broke our plan.
Yeah.
I think with our availability, we had already done it.
Perhaps. All right, Glenn, I think we've managed to quiet the room down, and now you can say whatever you were trying to say.
Which we couldn't hear because it was cutting out on the bridge.
Wasn't important, it was just to get back onto the meeting. So.
Okay. All right, we're back on the meeting.
All right, we're back on the meeting. So, Glenn, should we throw up your CPD skins? We have it up.
It basically says the same thing we've been talking about, but we can go through it. So the second slide is basically the same as the other one about common and what is adaptable.
Yeah.
The third one basically says, okay, does adaptable mean chaos? No, not if we manage it. So which bent dialogue gets used in the end? This is what I've already discussed. It should be the application or the solution platform. Typically, a user is running an application, whether that be a browser, Word, whatever. So the application should have priority, but he may not want to create one, so he defaults to the system or the platform dialog. And then at the bottom bullet says, well, what if the system or the platform doesn't have a dialog? Then open printing and defines and creates a generic, not sure how we make a human interface guideline dependent one, but that's the challenge, that can be used. So we've done our job from all the way from the printer to providing a default or generic dialogue.
Okay. I think we should... thank you so much for guiding the discussion, Glenn, and stimulating the discussion and for making some slides. And I think we should wrap up this topic and move on to Michael's presentation on the status of GoScript, because we're now 40 minutes over to 8.
Well, I thought that hadn't started yet. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're kind of way over on our time here.
What time is GoScript? Sorry, 4:30.
4:30.
Don't mind me. I translated wrong.
I wouldn't have cut you off, Mike. Sorry.
No, never mind. Carry on. Go ahead. Let's talk about skins for a little bit. Or actually, let's talk about what do we think we should do about CPD.
Well, next steps.
Yeah, next steps.
Well, obvious next step is the German government's going to fund the back end.
Well, there's politics there, too. We may have to reapproach the German government. The funnel is Peter, who may or may not disperse the coding money.
Yes, perhaps I have directly to talk to them and... The only problem is that we need some German registered company, more or less, to take the money. This was why Peter has taken the money and passed it on. Perhaps one can perhaps they could directly pay the two coders without some money in between.
Don't we have some company that we know through PWG or somebody who's in Germany?
Does the Linux Foundation have an European office so that they could receive euros from someone and pay the euros to someone?
It's Europe, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but Hill's not a company. Yes. I understand the distinction. So the next step here is for us to find out if the Linux Foundation has a European office that can take the money and distribute it to the actual developers, and for Till to immediately and promptly contact the German government, and Lars knows who the contacts are, and see if we can get that funding moving again, because we still have some promised funding from Canonical, and the funding that the German government was willing to provide, along with the funding from Canonical, would definitely cover all the coding and the integration and some of the back-end patching. So we'd get a lot closer. And then we could start talking about skins and the next generation dialogue and so on without losing ground on all of the code that's been written, most of what's been written works, and in fact has been tested. We could finish what needs to be written. Because some of that actual
planned funding was for major patching to the toolkit and in key applications. There was a short list. It's in the project plan on the open printing site for the next steps for Common Printing Dialogue. And then the other next step is for everyone on the phone and in this room to start participating in a discussion on the list. And I know we're all too busy to do that, but which means to start participating in some restarted printing architecture teleconferences, perhaps, talking about how do we get to level zero? How do we get guidelines and or actual reference implementation for one mobile platform that would show us how to recover the vast majority of the infrastructure of the DBus dialogue, the basic parse PPDs, and present, you know, pass the APIs in, within the dialogue, behind the dialogue, to pass printing options and so on, because there is localization support in there now in the APIs. So we could take advantage of multinational PPDs, CUPS extended PPDs, and we could get a lot closer to a reasonable answer for mobile devices, or at least some answer. And we could start at this next joint KDE joint desktop session, which is in Berlin. We could start trying to get buy-in from the embedded Linux / mobile developers, because we know from experience bringing the solution doesn't work.
But we're not John forcing the UI behind to them this time.
Yeah, we want to bring them the behaviors and say, here's an example UI that, you know, of using those behaviors. You can put up any UI you want. Here's the idea, is that there's only five or six behaviors at the second layer, and they're the package of the short list of properties with well-known selected default values.
Well, I think the next step is individuals need to identify what they would like to work on and how much they could work on. Because, as Till put in his presentation, it's manpower that's the problem.
It's certainly one of the problems, Glenn, but I still think before we need manpower for a mobile solution, we need to know what we think is the direction for mobile, which is why I think some discussion on the list and also some open printing teleconferences scheduled to be user-friendly to European and U.S. developers, who are most of the community who are developing right now, at least in the printing space, would probably be a good idea, so we could try to reach do we want to proceed with skins? Do we want to proceed with human interface? With behavior guidelines, meta behavior guidelines, whatever. Guidelines.
Although that's interesting, I don't know if we have any more than vaporware behind some of that.
Well, we do if we recover the libraries and the DBus interface, right?
Yeah, but do we have enough? Just putting a presentation together first of the behavior and some of the stuff we did today might help in discussion with those other groups.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. It sure would.
So there's some pre-work that needs to be done.
Right.
So pre-work for discussions with mobile platforms.
Try and see if we can work out the logistics of shaking loose the funding that the German government really is content to disperse, so that it's not being filtered in such a manner that the money never reaches the developers.
That has to be the first priority, otherwise we won't even have the back end.
Yeah, I think we need to have a damage control approach to recover it, recouping the back end and recovering it and completing the known loose ends. It isn't that long a list. And getting at least one important application and or one desktop printing UI patch, you know, toolkit printing UI patch to the point to where it's using that code, so we can demonstrate, we can show at the joint desktop developers conference and we can show at mobile conferences. I think there's one actually the same week. But we can start getting buy-in from people that want to have this problem, or at least, if not solved for them, have helped solving this problem so they don't have to understand what's behind the behavior in printing, because it takes too long to learn. It's just more complicated than it looks. We all know that. That's why drivers are difficult to write that have many features.
Okay, so that sounds great. I think making a projection beyond that is too hard.
Yeah, I think so, too. And the only other thing I wanted to say is I think we got to quit moving the target on what's the actual UI of the reference implementation of CPD on the desktop and just say, no, it is the current design. We're not changing it. We'll change it after we have experience from real users, not from 20 college students who are being paid to give their feedback.
Pick one and go with it. We're just doing that for a demo. Who cares?
Right, yeah. If somebody's got a wonderful idea for a whole other look and feel that actually could be more widely portable, good. Have at it. Show us how to do that look and feel. But it's pretty easy. There are a lot of good tools for mocking up UI on all platforms now.
Take my slide presentation, the buttons on it, and put it on a Windows or a Mac and run it as
right.
Demo. It doesn't have to actually even run on a mobile device. We're not demonstrating how it runs on a mobile device. We're indicating what it looks like and its behavior.
Right, yeah. What's its behavior? And that idea that you had that you've got a short list of icons that can easily be modified as needed for cultural aspects of multinationalization. But that those icons represent a well-known behavior, and everyone is on the same page about what that behavior is, at least for the standard attributes, the short list of standard attributes that you would use to achieve that behavior.
Okay, so on the short discussion on the CPD Level 0 Skins Guideline Generic Dialogue, we also need a scoping activity. We need to scope this whole activity so we can get it done. To some level.
Yeah. And we also need to, I think, realize that the LSB only adopts that which already ships everywhere. One of the things we're going to hear tomorrow is that a major forward step for the next version of the LSB will be to adopt CUPS 1.2. Yeah.
Yes.
Your master summarizes what my reaction to that is. I'm glad, except oh, good. These are some APIs which have been vastly improved in the intervening 6 or 7 years since CUPS 1.2 shipped, and we'd like to take advantage of those in printing.
That's a problem we cannot solve, so we just have
no, it is a problem we cannot solve, but that's what I meant about, we for instance, Till's really excellent work on, describing and showing examples and putting up reference examples of how to build a portable distribution-independent print driver. Step one is download the LSB and use the LSB compiler and the LSB interfaces, and you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a driver that talks to CUPS 1.2 interfaces, and none of the new work is going to show up for years later. So that's a good step in the right direction, but it's also a really good argument for why we got to get away from the only solution is a vendor-specific driver for every single model of a printer, because we're going to pay 5-6 years behind forever.
Well, right now we just need it to work. So if that means a single driver to a single printer, I don't care.
Well, yeah, no, I know. For a reference implementation, you're right. You're right.
And on the LSB discuss mailing list, there's currently a thread where the LSB guys are discussing that the LSB is too far behind.
Which is the perception of most application developers, and it is, but it's by design, because the LSB, unlike the System 5 interface definition, looks all the way backward. It doesn't look forward. It never attempts to suggest what the future of interfaces should be. That's not in their scope.
I only got 5 minutes, so one more discussion that on Till's list is, with these new changes and new thoughts and new concepts, I really like the idea of not having to modify PPD files to include CPD extensions.
Of not having to.
Yes. I'm going to have to figure out how to get around that little problem.
So we got to figure out how much is the exposure, right? How much supposedly needs to be modified for CPD specific hints extensions?
So who's using CPD extensions right now?
No one.
Can we do it without making a PPD extension? That's my comment.
Put it aside. And in the future, some may boundary kind of PPD, we can pick some from the put it aside.
Okay.
We need to talk, you know, by email and by phone with Lars and Cal to see how badly does that break presenting the CPD, right? You know, how much does the current CPD design depend on having those hints and extensions in the PPDs? Because modifying a million PPDs is not a real, or 10,000 PPDs is not really a very good solution.
Yeah. Well, you might have a comment for dialogue, but you may have nothing behind it.
Right.
I'm trying to understand where we are with the common printing dialogue. As I was saying, so first, we need to have a module that really parsing PPD to the heavy lifting task, and that module needs to have debug interface, is that correct?
Right.
So is that part done or not?
Yeah. It's using the CUPS PPD parser.
Right.
We can parse the extension.
Okay, so we
actually have that, but the point is the manufacturers haven't and don't especially want to spend the non-trivial amount of money to stick all those hints and constraints for the UI into their existing PPD files for every printer.
Right, so what I can say, we are not going to do anything to our PPDs, regardless of what the print dialog will be, because we have a lot of PPD files. We cannot change that easily.
And honestly, with perhaps some loss of fidelity or functionality, it seems to me that there could be something else much simpler that was one per manufacturer, or just one, that was a metadata file that says, okay, here's the new rules that constitute hints and, you know, hints and constraints. And just take any existing well-formed multi-link CUPS compliant PPD file that passes CUPS test PPD and pump those two into the code base of common print dialogue, and it in fact will yield a properly what we collectively think is a properly behaving dialogue without retrofitting PPDs. Because retrofitting PPDs, especially given that Mike said Apple's moving away from PPDs, is finally going to get us in trouble here. We're all going to go convince management to spend all that money, and then we're going to say, but don't worry, because by the time you ship it, it'll be irrelevant. That's not a good story.
We
Anything else, Ira? Because it's Michael's turn.
Yep. We're going to let Michael take his turn.
All right. So we're all done with this. We killed it, beat it to death one more time.
Yeah, and we can beat it a little tomorrow if we need to and wrap up, but we should do it more over email.
Yes, Michael. Is it also the case that you will do both your turns today already because you cannot come tomorrow?
Right. So everything you need to know is in here. And okay. More.
Oh, okay.
Did you hear me okay on the phone?
What?
Yep.
Thank you for inviting me again, Phil. And some of this is repeat a little bit of what I presented last year, but I'll try and talk a little bit about what's been actually in the trunk now, or the code, and released, and where I expect to be by the time we get to our next release. So, kind of an outline, I was going to talk a little bit about Ghost. There's a lot more people here than there were last year, and thank you everyone for hanging around. I know that by the time you get to the last talk, sometimes people are leaving. So I'm going to get a little bit of overview about Ghost Trip so that everyone understands what it is and what it does. I'll review what's new since last year and what's coming up. Then talk a lot about the color architecture, because that's kind of the relevant things here. I want to talk real briefly about path toning, and then some open issues that are of interest to the open source community in regards to the X11 Alpha device and hub color spaces. So kind of basic. So for those of you who don't know, GhostScript is a document conversion and rendering engine. It's written in standard C and right now it's a central component of the Linux Spring pipeline. GhostScript is kind of unique in that it has a dual license. There's a GPL license, and since Artifacts owns the copyright, Artifacts Software owns the copyright, we also do a proprietary license for commercial applications. And source documentation are available at GhostScript.com.
Michael, are those actually forks of the code or just different licenses according to who's using it?
The code is the same.
Okay. Good.
There's only one repository.
Okay.
Which is version.
Great.
So, a graphical overview.
Sorry. Yeah. Could you move just a bit close to the microphone?
We're moving the microphone closer to Michael.
Thank you.
Okay. That should be a lot better. I'll try and talk louder, too. So,
this is fine. Thank you.
Of the of GhostScript is basically kind of, you can think of this as being three tiers. There's the language parsers for PDF, XPS, PostScript, and the various flavors of PCL. There's the those break down the commands to a level that are passed to the common language that's passed to the graphics library. Depending on at the lower level here, then you have your output devices. And depending upon the sophistication and the of the output device, it may understand some of the high-level commands. For example, if I'm going out to a high-level output device like PDF Write, it will understand all the strokes and fills and transparencies, et cetera, that are generated from the XPS parsing, and those basically pass to the graphics library and get bundled up to the output device. If I have a not-so-smart or not as... or a device that, for example, a raster output device that doesn't understand any drawing commands, like TUPS, for example, then the graphics library is going to break all those down to raster fills or rectangle fills, and those get passed down to the device. And that's kind of the devices are really the key to understanding the way GhostScript works, and this is kind of a repeat of what I just said, in that devices can have this high-level functionality, and the graphics library has these default operations that the devices can inherit, and the graphics library would just go ahead and do those in that case. If GhostScript's put into an embedded environment, then actually those procedures can be replaced with calls into hardware. So you can do shading fills or trapezoidal fills if you have hardware acceleration for that. That's next slide, Matt. So what's the new changes in GhostScript since last meeting? Well, with the release of 9.0 in September, the new ICC color management code was added was released. In addition, in that same release, there was a FreeType is now the font renderer for GhostScript by default, and there's a new font engine API allowing everyone to bolt on their own font render if they want. With the release of 9.01, there were fixes for several issues with regards to the cuff color spaces. It turns out that when I added in the ICC color management stuff, I ended up breaking a few things here and there with regards to cuff color spaces, and Till pointed those out to me right away. So got those fixed. And we just had an interim release, 9.02, where there's some high-speed half-toning that was introduced, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. So what's upcoming? There's right now in the trunk, and this is being tested. There were several bugs in regard to this. If it turns out that if a source file had contained transparency, anti-aliasing wasn't working. So that's been fixed, and is as it says in the trunk, and seems to be working fine. At the time that the ICC code was put into GhostScript, The default CMM was Little CMS, which at the time I started the project was at 1.8, version 1.8 for Little CMS. Since then, Marty has updated Little CMS significantly, and so we've brought that into the trunk, and that you can now build GhostScript with Little CMS 2.1, and there's some minor differences, and I think those are due to issues in Little CMS. Especially with the version 4 ICC profiles, and I've got to work with him a little bit to track those down. A couple things that I'm hoping will be in the August release are this object-based color rendering, where you can specify different output ICC profiles for text, images, and graphic objects. And also support for the output rendering intent, and I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the talk here. I've got one slide on that. And I also am trying to hopefully get in support to add in proofing profiles, device-sync profiles, and the ability to override internal profiles. And another interesting thing, or thing of interest for some of you, might be that GhostScript, which has been using the version as its source control, we've all agreed to move to Git, so that'll happen soon. So the way the color flow occurs in GhostScript now, then with the new architecture, is that all the source colors are defined in terms of ICC profiles, okay? And for the device, of course, you have a related ICC profile, or another ICC profile, and those are both provided to the CMM, squashed together to create the link transform, and then the data all goes through that. Now, there's also a path, of course, to allow if it turns out that the source and destination profiles are the same, then the data is passed directly to the device. So some of the features are in the color architecture. It says very easy to interface a different CMM to GhostScript. So the way the API, the CMM's been written, I'll show the API in a bit. But it's a relatively few number of commands to do that, and it should be easy to interface every CMM that I've run across over the years. Every color space is defined in terms of ICC profiles. That includes PostScript color spaces, some of the CIEABC, DEF, DEFG. All those are actually converted to equivalent ICC profiles so that the color management can be done by that single CMM. The link transformations that are generated and any internally generated profiles that are created from these PostScript color spaces are all cached so that those only need to be done once. There's this concept I'll show in a minute of an ICC manager that's pretty easy to access throughout the entire code since it's part of the imager state. Devices can have their ICC profiles set, and also communicate their ICC profiles, obviously, to GoScript. It operates nicely in a multi-threaded environment. GoScript can operate in a multi-threaded manner where different sections of the page can be rendered by individual threads, and those individual threads can actually share a common link cache of link transformations, since pretty much across a single page, you're going to have the same similar kinds of colors across that page. So there's no reason for them all each to have separate copies of the link transformations. It handles name colors, either with the ICC name color profiles or if you have a proprietary format for defining name colors. Color management done, ICC color management can be done with device end colors. In particular, well, I'll go into that a little bit more in a minute. Right now, this is upcoming. So right now we do define, you know, we know throughout the code when we're transforming color, whether it was from a text object or a graphic or image. So we already have that information, so it's just a matter, simple matter then of going ahead and making sure to pick the right device profile given that object type. And again, I'm going to try and get in the proofing and profile overrides and also device link profiles capability added into the code. So this is kind of a graphical overview of the whole architecture. So you have the graphics library and the interpreter over here in the lower right. And if it's rendering a raster line from an image, then, and let's say that was RGB in a particular RGB color space, but I'm going out to a CMYK device, then the graphics library will query or ask the link cache to hand it a link transformation, for those two ICC profiles. If the link cache does not have that object, then it will go ahead and ask for it from the CMM. The CMM will provide it. It'll get put in the cache, and then the graphics library will go ahead and apply the link transformation. Once it's done, it lets the link cache know that it's all done with that object. So within the device, you could have eventually be able to have different device profiles for different object types and also for various rendering cases. Within GoScript, included in the ROM file system of GoScript, there's default ICC profiles for undefined or device RGB, device gray, device CMYK. There's LAB ICC profile. There's sRGB, sgray, which are basically used for enumerated color spaces in JPEG 2000 images. And then there's some PostScript, like I called TS underscore gray, RGB, and CMYK ICC profiles, which basically emulate the old PostScript color conversions. And those are needed in the case when you're rendering for soft masks, because you actually need to make sure that white gets mapped to white and black gets mapped to black, kind of thing. You can't have those kinds of errors or those kinds of things not under careful control when you're dealing with soft masks. And then there's the ICC manager where these things are all stored, the default profiles and the soft mask profiles. Okay, next slide. So the link cache itself, where these things are stored, all these objects are reference counted, that way, if multiple threads are accessing this, you can keep track of whether or not it's okay to remove an entry if you needed to make room for a new one. The entries are all indexed by a hash code that's based on the input color space, the output color space, and various parameters, including rendering parameters, including if you're doing proofing or what the object type is. Okay. In the case of name colors, with respect to ICC profiles, the format for defining name colors is basically just a lookup table, and it's only relevant for 100% tone value. So if I had basically a list of names in the table, Pantone uncoated yellow, Toyota red, and you have to have the CIDLAB value, which defines that. And optionally, you could have device values, for example, CMYK values for those colors, but that's only for 100% tint. So if you have something that's shaded at 25%, this table is kind of a limited value. Some of our customers have proprietary methods where they and tables to handle that case, and so we have an interface then to go ahead and pass that information along to the CMM, which they can intercept and go ahead and do their secret transformation. Okay. And I have reference implementation in the code that shows how that would happen. So I mentioned earlier about conversion of PostScript color spaces, and also there's some PDF color spaces which are non-ICC, for example, the Cal Gray and Cal RGB. So these are all, again, converted to ICC forms that the CMM can handle. And, of course, these mappings, in the case of PostScript, can be kind of complicated because you have these procedural mappings. You have very complicated functions. But you can't do that kind of thing in ICC profiles, so those are all sampled and then stuffed into tables, basically. And you can run into situations where you have multiple matrix operations and procedural mappings in these PostScript color spaces. And even though that color space doesn't have a multidimensional lookup table, the only way to represent that with the ICC profile is to actually create the multidimensional lookup table. You can skip this slide, and we'll go through that. And the profile cache for these things is, again, used to avoid, repeating these. So if you keep encountering the same PostScript color space, this equivalent ICC profile is only created one time, and then it's referenced in the cache with respect to its resource ID. For device and color spaces, the way that a lot of people want the operations to occur is that they have color management of the CMYK values, and any additional spot colors that are there will get passed through unmolested, assuming that the output device can understand those spot colors. If not, then... Oops, did we lose our connection?
Okay.
All right.
We're back.
Okay. If the device doesn't understand those spot colors, of course, the normal method is to go through the alternate tint transform defined in the PDF or PostScript. Architecturally, though, what's neat I've added into GoScript is the ability to define in color or device end ICC profiles for these input color spaces. So it's possible to hand to GoScript a series of device end ICC profiles, and it will actually substitute the alternate tint transform for these profiles, and you can end up getting much better color management or better control color management of the device end colors within the document
for proofing.
So the API to the CMM, this might not be so interesting to people, but I just want to show how simple it is. It is that there's a couple commands for getting the profiles, either from memory or from a file. There's a couple operations for getting the link transformation. So basically you're handing a handle to the source profile, the destination profile, and some rendering parameters, and then you get back your link transformation. And there's ones for doing it for when you have a proof, and also when you have this name structure that has this table. There's commands for doing the transformations. So there's transformations on a single color, on a buffer of colors, and then also on a name color with a tint value. And then there's a few supporting commands that need to be implemented to get information about profiles. For example, the colorant names and the profile, if there are any, the channel count and the color space in which the profile operates. Most of the those are for error checking. Then there's some cleanup in case those things are needed by the CMM, by the external CMM. So this is probably a four enter. So this is the current color command line interface option. So there's you can set. So there's a set of command line options to set the default IP profiles for gray, RGB, CMYK, and as I mentioned, you can specify even device end profiles that are used for device end color spaces. So if these aren't specified, those default ones that are included in the ROM file system of GoScript will be used. You can also specify right now a single output IC profile, and you can specify a directory where to find these profiles if you have them all stashed somewhere. And then you can also specify a name color profile. The ones I want to add by the next release are the ability to add to specify the output profiles for different object types. Now I've got to figure out, well, what happens if someone specifies, you know, a text graphic and an image, and they also specify the output profile? Well, probably the case will be that the output profile is going to override all those, and you know, it's kind of a conflicting thing. One wouldn't do that in general, but there's also specifying the rendering intent. So I assume everyone knows that within an IC profile, of course, you can have, there's three rendering intents defined in there, the perceptual, saturation, color metric, and then, of course, there's even a fourth one, which is absolute color metric. So for each of these, I'd want to be able to specify the which rendering intent should be used for that particular profile. And then adding in the ability to specify a proofing profile so that I can emulate how does this, have GoScript go ahead and do the proofing of rendering, how would this image or this file look when I print it on that particular printer over there and I can view it on my screen. And then also specifying a device link profile whereby, for example, there's customers who want to render always to swap CMYK, for example, or FOGRA, some FOGRA CMYK color space, and then they want to go from that color space to a series of different renders, and they would do that through this device link profile. And then also an option to ignore embedded profiles or override embedded profiles. Maybe override would be better.
Override would be more obvious to what you meant.
Yes.
So it means if you specify that option, override it with what I just told you on the command line.
Right.
Don't take the embedded one.
Right. Yeah. Treat them as device RGB and away you go. So that pretty much ends the color discussion. I want to make one note about what we've done with regard to halftone, since that's related to printing. So with the most recent release, there's been the inclusion of some high-speed halftoning for 8-bit thresholding, and this makes use of the of some of the SSE2 operations. Basically, we're thresholding 16 pixels at a time by doing that, and right now, that's just for the support is just in the monochrome output device case only. But I'm hoping by the next release, actually, I have to have by the next release this in place for CMYK planar devices. And it rips right along. It's pretty nice. So I wanted to talk a little bit about bug tracking. Of course, there, you know, GoScript at bugs.goscript.com is where all our bug data management is done. And so I want to talk briefly then about, go ahead and go to the next slide, about the bugs that are somewhat relevant to GoScript and the open source community. So for the CUPS device, there's only a few open issues, and at least as far as color is concerned, and they kind of go back to this RGB W color space. And from what I can read in the comments and the discussion that's going on, Till, maybe you can shed some light on this. You know, there's some confusion about what W is supposed to be, and it looks like it's supposed to be a text tag plane from what I can tell. Is that correct or not?
Yes,
it looks like the way it's implemented in the CUP device is that it's a black.
I exactly know how it is intended. What the HP and IP piece is in addition to the three channels for color, they need a fourth channel, and I think HP needs only one bit in that channel to mark which points are absolutely black, so that they are printed with black ink or toner, and never with a mix of the color ink or toner.
So, all right. So do they want that to be a they don't want that then to be a text, do they want that to be a text tag plane, or do they want it to be just that, if this, so they want red, green, and blue, and then they want to know if that red, green, and blue value should be printed with a black, as black text, right?
Yes, yes.
Or as black only?
Yes.
I mean, the way that that should be implemented, then, we have a device right now that's the this RGB tag device that is kind of a neat device in that it it outputs RGB in three planes. Actually, it's chunky, so it needs RGB. And then there's a fourth entry, though, which is the object type identifier. So it sets a value based on whether this object type is that pixel, if it was from a graphic, if it was from a text, or whether it was from an image. And what's neat about it also is that there's transparency, and you have overlapping pieces of text and graphic and images. It'll do this bitwise boring of these things together, so you can tell that, oh gosh, this location actually had a blend of text and image, or text and graphics. And then it's up to the device then to decide what it wants to do with that information. But I think, you know, doing something similar to what was done there for this device would be kind of interesting. Then, and Tuff can do an extra, or whatever happens, you know, to generate RGBW from that could occur in a smart way. Who leads that, Till?
Who leads what?
Who leads the RGBW, you know, the HP stuff? Who is the person who...
This is
Are you the one?
No. No,
all right. Well, you can email me. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense.
You should perhaps work it out how it would exactly be.
Because I think that would be useful to you, kind of the RGB plus a tag, basically extra data that you know, tells you whether it's image, text, or graphic. Okay.
I have no idea what WG.
Yeah, I thought it was white. Well, you know, projectors.
For me, it looks like something like white, RGB plus white, or so.
Well, that's what I thought, because, I mean, a projector is like this. They do RGB plus white, right?
Right.
I thought, why is there a projector display color space in cups? It really bothered me. But then I got looking at the cups code, and cups are just sticking black in there. If that's all it's doing, RGBK.
I thought,
what's that? What's that doing for me?
Essentially what it is.
So that's the only issues that I saw that remain open for that are specific to cups. With GhostScript, the X11 Alpha device was the default device for Ubuntu, and I'm not sure about. I assume all the Linux operating systems, right? Is that true, Till, or not?
Yeah, the XS Alpha. Yes, I have moved it upstream to X11 as default.
Right.
Because of these problems.
Right. Well, these are in the process of getting solved now. Henry and I fixed a couple issues in the last couple of days. The X11 Alpha device was written rather strangely. I got to looking into it, but these should all be taken care of by the time of the August release. I'm certain of that. They're making some good progress on it. So perhaps then at that time you can stick X11 Alpha back as the default device. There's this open bug that is related to transparency color spaces and actually specifically transparency patterns with transparency. And In particular, it turns out that Cairo generates this terrible, what I would call terrible PDF content, in that, and this is an example here, this little image of these stars. Each of these stars is basically a pattern, but the pattern is a full page, it wants a full page transparency buffer to draw this one little object here. And we just recently had added in support for transparency in patterns, and then realized that Cairo was generating these silly things. There was a separate branch created to solve this issue now, and that'll also be fixed in the August release.
The current version, when you feed in that file, you get only the upper left star.
Yeah, I fixed that so that it does draw everything, and then there's some efficiency things with regard to memory, and that what I've now done is made sure to only draw this part, even though the thing is specifying, hey, I've got this whole transparency buffer this full page. When you start doing that 600 DPI,
and when transparency is really drawn transparency, then also all the things start to be visible.
Yes. So that'll be fixed, and then hopefully at that point that'll fix your slowness issues. I'm 99% sure that's where where any performance issues you have, and then you can go ahead and put GoScript back with the PDF drafter.
So that in generic PDF drafter can be GoScript based.
Right.
And if you do have any other, once we fix that, if you do have any files where you feel that Poplar is faster, let us know, because, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we want. And,
yeah.
I mean, that helps make GoScript all that much better. Okay. And then the last thing I had to mention was, and this has been a discussion on the OpenICC list. I don't know if any of you subscribe to that, but it's there's just a lot of discussion on that. And I can't even keep up with it all because I don't have time to read it, but sometimes people get very passionate about this stuff and quite mean. There's an example where someone pointed out, and this is a valid bug that was pointed out with regard to output intent. So output intent in the PDF is basically an ICC profile that specifies that, hey, here, by whoever created the creator of that PDF is saying that my intent is for this, the colors in this thing are targeted towards this particular device. Okay. Now, and then the Gantt working group has this nice test file that it should display like this without the green X's, and GoScript right now shows the green X's because we're not paying any attention to the output intent. And just to make sure we were doing things right, though, I went ahead and pulled the output intent out, the ICC profile out of the PDF, went ahead and handed it to GoScript and said, hey, here's my output profile, and sure enough, I get the proper output. My issue, or my concern here is that if you read the PDF spec, the way that it's described in terms of there can be an array of output intents, and it's not clear to me how the device should communicate that, hey, I really should be using, this particular output intent. It's a valid one for me. I need to do a little bit more research on that to understand how that would be handled. I think it should be possible. Well, I know it's possible, but I think for the next August release, I'm going to add in the ability to an option which would be, now, and this wouldn't be default, you'd have to add this in, but basically a MyC use output intent that will go ahead and specify then if there is an output intent in the file, then go ahead and use that as the device profile, assuming that it all matches and you're going to the proper device. In other words, if there's an RGB, if you're going to RGB output device and there's a... and the output intent is CMYK, then it's not going to end up using that one. But if you're going to a CMYK device, then it would. So that's all I had. And if there's any things that come up, you're free to email me at
there.
So your next major release is August?
Yes, we try and do releases in every 6 months. Usually there's one in February and then one in August.
And the 902 was an exception which was put in between.
Yes, that was made.
This does not change the scheme of the other movies. It was especially for a special customer of RPA.
Right. With the pack and the half-toning stuff that we did.
Okay.
And so, I don't know where...
reformatted for distribution.
Right. So what I had asked Till last night was, how I'm seeing lots of discussion in the OpenICC stuff about, is it Richard Hughes, the work that he's doing? I'm still not clear who's doing color management where. I mean, from my assumption is that all the color management's being done at GhostScript, and someone's just going to communicate the proper profiles to GhostScript. Is that correct? And then
Richard Hughes is more or less his intention is to get color management into Fedora, and the color management really executed is in GhostScript or in Proxy.
Right.
But one thing is, for example, when one has a cup queue, the cup queue needs assigned profiles assigned to the queue, which are the color correction for the particular indent paper of the printer. Then GhostScript has to execute these profiles. One has cup BPD extensions and so on, so that one can define. One can assign these profiles. And the color D, I think, more or less, is some possibility perhaps that user can send profiles or something like that, but I don't know exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, what color D is basically a daemon that's available to various systems where that's the systems can basically ask color D, well, what's the correct profile to use for this device with these settings? So, for example, for a printer, if it knows that the output is going to printer A, it would ask color D, well, I need the profile for printer A, and here's the settings I want to use. I want to set the media to this type and the DPI to this number and so on. And color D is going to hand back a profile that's the best one match for that particular device with those particular settings.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I mean, does anyone see any functionality that I haven't talked about that they would like to see or that's missing or? Good.
Okay. So I know in the past couple of years you've moved to the linked transforms from a previously more Byzantine solution and got a tremendous performance improvement.
Yeah,
I just wanted to mention, you guys are saying it's already fixed. wasn't a trivial change.
No, it's taken a couple of years, it's working quite well. Now I feel like the things that I want to add on are kind of the bells and whistles.
Now you're moving to LCMS2. Are you seeing performance improvements there too as well?
No, we haven't done the comparison, performance-wise between there. I've talked to Marty, and he had indicated that there wasn't a whole lot of performance difference between the two.
Okay.
I've looked at where the bottlenecks are, at least in 1.8, and I've seriously thought about going in and writing a little SSE2 optimization in the tetrahedral interpolation that he has in there. And then letting him have that, uploading that to him, because that is where the big hit is in performance when going through there. And I don't know why he hasn't written that, because everybody has SSE2, and it's just right there waiting to happen. Well, not the poor ARM guys. But.
Yeah. Well, we've also talked about the possibility of using a GPU processor to handle those transforms as well.
Yeah.
really bump the speed even to a huge extent, although that may not exist on a print server, though.
Right, right. Actually, yeah, I talked to some folks at one place that they're doing just that. They've actually taken GhostScript and little CMS and then offloaded the color transformations though to a GPU, and they got a big improvement.
Oh yeah, it would be huge if you could do that.
And I thought about doing that too, because I guess it's not too hard to code using NVIDIA CUDA stuff.
The NVIDIA acceleration is converting colors for printing.
Yes, that would be what it would be doing.
Interesting. Using the graphics card to do something which doesn't have anything to do with displaying something on the screen.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the things just to kind of throw it out there, since we're talking about this, is there's a composite plugin that does color management to the screen using the shaders, and it's actually written in OpenGL.
All right.
So that it would run on any OpenGL capable graphics card.
Right.
Just thought I'd throw that out there so you're not dependent on NVIDIA or whatever.
Right, right, right. All right, well, that's all I had. So, thank you. Did I get them coming fast?
Thank you.
Richard Hughes might be talking about color management tomorrow.
What, Tim?
I think Richard Hughes was planning to talk about color management tomorrow.
Good. Okay.
Tim, I bring you a little bit closer to the other.
We're carrying your cable around, Tim.
Okay. Will the phone bridge work tomorrow morning in the different room?
We hope so.
Okay. Oh. we hope so. That's something we'll perhaps try to check yet tonight with organizers to make sure that we have the projection screen and the phone. The phone bridge better work, or we're going to have a lot of trouble with people who are presenting remotely.
Yeah.
We'll try and work on it yet tonight, Tim.
Okay, great.
Well, apart from being applauded for being quick, Michael, I wanted to say I have watched in lo these years GhostScript evolve and really be responsive, not just about performance, but about functionality, so that it really didn't have to be replaced by Poplar or replaced by something else in one or another distribution. And so, well done. Okay, we're adjourned.
Woo-hoo.
We're ending this session. Goodbye, those on the phone.